Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, and Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink Indy. Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are talking barbecue and wine, so it should be a great show. And it is so good to have some real springtime weather, because we're talking competition barbecue this week with Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue. Next Saturday kicks off the competitive barbecue season here in Indiana, and we'll let you know where you can go right here in Indianapolis to check out some seriously competitive barbecue. But we're also talking wine this week, since Indy's Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wines was back home again this past week, sampling his latest wines at several events around town. I caught up with Dino for an update on the wine biz, and I also talked with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech about how he and his culinary students used Skype to do a wine tasting with Dino, which worked out very well, as you'll hear. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, the warm spring weather is drawing everyone outdoors, and I just know some of you are thinking about cooking out. It's definitely time to get the barbecue grill ready for summer if you haven't already. But some of you may be thinking that, well, you know, those ribs you make on the grill are pretty good, and maybe you should go pro. Well, for anyone out there interested in competitive barbecue, Indy's own Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue gives us the scoop today on cooking for competition. He'll be competing at the CCS Spring Festival and Barbecue Competition Saturday, April 23rd at Calvary Christian School at 3639 South Keystone Avenue in Indianapolis. I sat down with Jeff recently to get a little inside information on what competitive barbecue is all about.
There's a lot of things that go into it. So not only is the people that you meet on the road and having fun with them and learning things from them, but it's also, if you have a competitive nature, obviously it's going to be a good sport for you to go into. Judges have a very big control. Everybody's opinion's different. Flavor profiles are different. For me, competition barbecue is trying to pick the best quality meats that we can, getting a dry rub and a sauce and your flavor layers just right to hit all elements that you're trying to hit, be it like for us, you know, usually we like to start with a little bit of sweet in the front side of it, and in the back side, as you're swallowing, basically you're going to get a little heat. Not a lot of heat, but for us, it's not all just about sweetness. So we want multiple flavor layers in our competition.
Now, how do you figure all that out? Kind of tell me the backstory about how you got into this and how it progressed to where you are now.
Well, I got into it a little over 20 years ago, and my dad got me into it, and Ron Yater, and we just did it for fun. It was classic, a hobby, right? And we did.
To start out from a backyard thing?
Yeah, from a backyard thing, basically. We did a lot of cooking at home, some kind of things. And first contest was at Deer Creek way back when in the early 90s. And it was just a rib contest. So we cooked ribs, and we kind of got the bug there. Can't really recall. I think we got a second or third at that contest out of 9 teams. So it wasn't.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, for your first one, we were proud. And then that year also the World Pork Expo was in town. So we did that down at the fairgrounds. And there was, I don't know, around 60 teams there that year probably. And we ended up taking like 9th in ribs. And that's the only thing we cooked out of the 4 categories because we only had a little tiny cooker.
But no, that's the thing. Sometimes at the contests, you know, you see great big rigs and everything. But then sometimes you see just little grills and cookers and things like that. So you started out small then.
Yeah, real small. I mean, went from that. That was just a dome type cooker that we were cooking on then. We got a little larger. When was it? 2000 or 99, I think. My dad ended up winning the World Pork Expo, so that's where we ended up. He started with a bigger rig then because they gave one away. So now he had one on wheels, which back then most of your competition teams didn't have large setups. They didn't have RVs. They didn't have toy haulers. They had 10x10 tents and cots and small cookers, you know. The profiles changed so much over the years. It started you could have a decent dry rub, a decent sauce, and you should do decently at the contest. You know, where it's evolved to now is I would say the RVs and pull behinds are more prevalent than your 10x10 tents nowadays. There's not many people just dry rubbing. There's a lot of injecting going on. There's a lot of different layer profiles that you're doing on your meats. You know, you really only have about a 24-hour window to do anything with anyway. So it's evolved to be, I kind of relate it to where NASCAR was years ago and to where it is now. And I know it's nearly not that large. But, I mean, you have contests out there paying $50,000. You have contests out there paying $20,000. I mean, so there's some large contests out there that pay big money. And when you start getting into big money, you get into people have they're very closed mouth about what they do. It's kind of like your playlist. You know, you're not going to tell people your playlist. We do have a group of friends that we're all pretty tight. They all do pretty well. We'll bounce a little bit of recipes off each other. But no one gives the 100% out there. I can tell you that. So it
has become a very big deal. You know, with, like you said, with the big RVs, the big rigs, the secrecy on the ingredients.
Right.
So when did that happen?
I think it's evolved over the years. You start seeing a lot more larger trailers. When I got involved in about 1999, I built my first trailer. But I was doing a rib fest circuit, so I needed something large. It's more like a kitchen. So I put a big smoker in that. I had a sink system. I had refrigeration in it. So that was about the start of where people started building bigger things to do competitions on. And through the last 15 years, you've just seen it grow more and more and more, and people getting bigger and bigger. And you know, it's not necessarily it makes you cook better. But it makes it more comfortable to be there for 3 days while you're doing it. So
some of them are multi-day events, and you are there. I mean, you're tending to the whatever you have on the cookers. You know, you're sleeping there. You know, you're there all day. What's one of those events like?
Well, we usually roll in on a Thursday, depending on where we're pulling to. It's usually on a Thursday afternoon. On Friday morning, you can get your meat inspected at most of the contests. And you have to have that meat inspected in order to use it. It can't come in pre-marinated, pre-rubbed. It has to be...
It's just a plain piece of meat.
Right, raw product. So, and you know, we have chicken, pork shoulders, ribs, and beef brisket are usually the main four categories. So we usually pull in on Thursday afternoon. We get set up. We get the trailer ready, get organized. Friday morning, we're usually hitting... As soon as we get our meat inspected, we're working on trimming it and injecting it. And you can trim your meat before you get to a contest, but we're usually not that organized to get that done before we go. So we're usually doing that on Friday morning. That's about a four-hour process to get everything done. Once we have it trimmed, then we start our injection processes. We start our rub processes. And then after all that's done, Friday is more of a social day. You kind of watch people roll in. Talk to people you haven't seen in a long time, kind of figure out if you're changing stuff up on your game plan, you know, rubs, sauces, you kind of work with those a little bit. Sometimes on Friday we might do a sample cook of some chicken or something along those lines. But our competition usually starts with the meat throwing on about 10 o'clock at night on Friday night.
Oh, so. My goodness. So that for a Saturday event. Right.
Yeah, we're a low and slow cook. There's teams out there that cook hot and fast, it's called, which they're cooking at a higher temperature, obviously, and it's a shorter process. For us, we're still about a 225 to 250 degree cooker. We run those. Our pork butts will go on at, like I said, around 10 o'clock at night, and those aren't actually turned in until usually around noon the next day, 12:30 the next day. So we run with those. The next piece of meat that we'll throw on is our brisket, and that usually hits about 2 o'clock in the morning. then...
So you are up all night tending to this.
Yeah, no, we have a crew of three. We have Brent Coons, Jim Coldren, and myself, Jeff Yater. And, you know, that's our team that we run with on a normal... We all have our roles, let's say. You know, Coonsy, as we call him, he's usually our middle-of-the-night guy. He likes to... I necessarily doesn't maybe not like it, but he's usually the one that's getting up and stirring the fire up a little bit in the middle of the night. But yeah, it's an all night process for us. I mean, we start and one of the cookers that we deal with, it's not like a pellet cooker or anything like that. So it's something that you have to tend to and you have to make sure your temperatures aren't spiking or dropping or whatever. So yeah, it's an all night event for us. And hopefully the next day everything's coming off right when you want it. We're not much of resters. There's a lot of teams out there. What they'll do is like on their bigger pieces of meat, they'll pull them and rest them for a couple hours before they actually turned in. We don't really do that too much. It's just something that, being that I've done this so long, you just kind of get in the old school ways of doing things and how things have evolved with like hot and fast cookers and things like that. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around doing that just because everything I've been taught for so many years is so low and slow.
You mentioned, you know, you're watching the people come in then, you know, the night before. It seems like it's a real community, right?
Oh yeah. I've met, I don't know how many friends through the barbecue world. I mean, not only are we local and we do local barbecue with the restaurants, but over the years of knowing people and seeing how many people have taken a hobby such as myself to a business level. You know, I mean, I know guys that one guy, Ray Lampe, which is, he's the big green egg rep. First time we met Ray was in Michigan. He was sitting Indian style cooking on a hibachi. So, you know, he's come a long way from then. And, you know, Byron, Bad Byron, which owns Butt Rub, you know, he started when I started way back when. And now he has, you know, a seasoning and spice company, you know. So there's a lot of people that have taken this competition barbecue to the next level.
We've been talking with Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue in Indianapolis. For more information on the upcoming festival, go to ccsfest.com. And stay with us for more from Jeff here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio talking about barbecue today with professional barbecue competitor and restaurant owner Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue. His first event of the season is coming up April 23rd. The CCS Fest is at Calvary Christian School in Indianapolis, but his season stretches throughout the summer. Jeff tells us where he'll be competing and what it's like on the professional barbecue circuit. How does the competition schedule work?
Well, for our schedule, it's not as heavy as some people that do it out there. I mean, we have three restaurants that we're trying to run at home. So, you know, our time's limited to be out there because, like we discussed, I mean, a competition for us usually runs from Thursday, depending on where we're at, and maybe pulling in on back home on Sunday. So, you know, you're down to 4 days there, you know. So our season will start next weekend, or the 23rd. And it'll run through third weekend in September, okay? But we're spread out. We have a real heavy season at the start, so we do two back-to-back. The first one's in Indy here, then we go into Liberty the next weekend, which is a double contest. And that one's, they have a car show and stuff that goes on out there. It's not next to Brookville Lake. That's a fairly nice contest. And then we're down for a week. And then we go into back-to-back into Warsaw, Indiana, and then Boonville, Indiana, which Boonville's a new contest for us, so we'll see how that works, as well as the Indianapolis contest. We didn't do that last year because we were opening the Castleton store in April. Right. So
now what is the first contest? Tell me what that one's going to be.
That one's a new contest for us. It's held here off of Keystone and Keystone and 70. It's over off of a church over there. And that one, like I said, is a new contest for us. I think it'll be a smaller contest. You'll get a lot of locals that come in here. A few guys from Illinois will probably be at that contest. A lot of guys are just starting their season. So if they're busting out new recipes, this is the contest that's going to hit. Us, we'll probably run with pretty much what we left with last year, tweak it a little bit, and see how it scores at the first contest. first contest is shaking off the dust, you know.
I wondered how the first contest goes, you know, if it's, just trying to sort of get back in the swing of it.
Yeah, and it's totally different than cooking at the restaurants. I mean, we cook at the restaurants every day, and people, they don't understand. They're like, well, they have an advantage. They cook every day. Well, it's a totally different kind of cookers, totally different kinds of styles that we're doing. So it usually is a trial and error on the first one. That's why we rarely practice, right?
You don't not out there, you know, cooking for weeks before the competition starts?
Not usually, but this year we are practicing. So we'll cook ribs down this weekend, and we'll cook some chicken recipes this weekend, just trying to get a feel. I'm notoriously a baby back kind of cooker. I cook baby backs. This is one thing that's evolved over the course of the competitions. Baby backs, depending on what region you're in, don't work very well.
No, why is that?
Just like sauces, people just have a tendency to lean towards different cuts of meat. You know, if you're down in Memphis area, they say if you're not cooking baby backs, you're not winning. You know, so I've always cooked baby backs. So for me, I don't like change. Okay, so I've always cooked baby backs, and this year we're switching. All right.
So, oh my goodness! Yeah. So you're changing it up?
Yeah, I'm going into a St. Louis rib, which is a meatier rib. We'll see. I got three different brands that I'm trying here this next weekend. I don't know which one will be the winner out of that, but I've got a few guinea pigs lined up, so I think that we'll figure that out. But that's the thing that we're competition is going now. I mean, back to the days where you used to go to Sam's Club and buy meat. Some people still do that, which some people do well with that. But a lot of people are looking for better quality meats because you have bigger numbers on the line. You know, to win and do well at a competition, you want the grand champion. You can win one category, which is great to win a category, because usually the teams there, the competition is very high. And but to win the grand champion is really what you're going for, and that's where the biggest payout.
Tell me what you have to do to win the grand champion.
It's basically a total score of four categories. So you have, you know, like I said, your chicken, your ribs, your pork, and your brisket. And those are the order that they get turned in. So first you'll turn in chicken, then you'll turn in ribs, then you'll turn in pork, and then you'll turn in your brisket. To win grand champion, really in my mind, it's consistency. You have to be a consistent cook. You can't go out and win one category and expect to win the whole thing because, I mean, our goal is to take four top tens. If you take four top tens, you probably have a pretty good chance of hitting that grand champion or reserve grand champion. That's where the real money comes from. Not only is it about, you know, the money, because a lot of times it's not a lot. It's more about bragging rights. It's more about contests that come into play at the end of the year that you have to win grand champions in order to be even available to go to them.
Oh.
So, you know, for like us, the American Royals is the largest contest in the United States. We've been to that three or four times now, but we won't go to the Royal unless we get invited. There's two different sides to the Royal. There's the invitation side, which back in the day when we first started, that was about 50 teams getting invited. Now the Royal probably has 180 teams that are invited.
Oh, my goodness. So it's huge.
Yeah, well, that's just the more contests that are out there, the more grand champions that are out there, you know. So that's you kind of can see how that's grown just over those 20 years as far as that size of the contest. And last year was the largest American Royal that they ever had. They had to move it to Arrowhead Stadium. So it was their first year at Arrowhead Stadium. They had about 630 teams total. So your chances of winning that, I mean, it's more about experiencing it. You know, like our buddy Brent Coons that cooks with us, he had never been to the Royal. And so I wanted him to experience that since we won. So we were going. And the Jack Daniels is another one. That's probably my favorite contest and probably across the board with your competitors. It's probably one of their favorite contests as well.
Now tell me why.
It's just a different call. It's the best of the best, you know. I mean, you not only have to win a grand champion to have your chance to go to the Jack Daniels, you also have to get lucky enough to get your name drawn out of the hat because they only pick one team per state. So, you know, Indiana has 11 contests this year, so you'll have 11 different teams in that into that hat. If you go outside of the state and say you cook in Kentucky or whatever state, if you win a grand champion in their state, you'll have a name in their hat. So you can have multiple names and multiple hats. Or if you win, say you won three contests in Indiana, you'd have three of your names in that hat. So not only do you have to win a contest as far as grand champion goes for the Jack Daniels, you have to get lucky enough to actually get your name pulled out of the hat. Sure. And we've been there twice, so we've done all right. I mean, a lot of guys cook their whole life and never get to the Jack, you know? I mean, it's just one of those things where a little bit of luck and you have to win a contest. So some guys get really upset. I have a very good friend that he is hard after the competition circuit, and he, I think, did over 45 contests last year. I think he was best ribs in KCBS. He had 7 or 8 or 9 names in hats and didn't get pulled. So
must be tough.
He was a little mad, but hey, it's the luck of the draw.
We've been talking with Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue in Indianapolis about competitive barbecue. We'll be back with more from Jeff here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. This is Jolene Katzenberger, and we are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio talking today with restaurant owner and professional barbecue team member Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue. Now, professional barbecue has become a huge thing, and Jeff has been a part of competitions all over the country. He tells us what the events are like for participants and fans, and offers a little advice for anyone thinking about entering a contest.
If somebody wanted to go, what would they see?
They're all different. I mean, some of them have things that are going along with it. Like I mentioned, in Liberty, there'll be a car show there. There'll be vendors there that they can buy some stuff, you know. Probably the best contest, in my personal opinion, in the state as far as crowd involvement would be Madison, Indiana, and that's in August. And they've just done a terrific job at that contest. It's been going on. I think this is going to be the 14th or 15th year, and we've been now – I said I'd backed off the competition road. I've been to Madison every year but the first year that they started. So,
oh, my gosh. So that must be a favorite.
Yeah, that's more of a – it's a big contest, okay? And usually you don't do very well at contests if you're only doing one a year. So, you know, but we got to see a lot of our friends that come into that state for that contest. And it is a favorite contest. The organizers are great. You know, we got honored last year for being one of two teams that have been there that long.
Oh,
you know,
God.
So that's a staple for us. Other contests, I mean, you're just going to come in and you're going to see barbecue contests. Next weekend here locally in Indianapolis, the CCS contest, I'm not sure what to expect there. I haven't been there. It's a huge parking lot. I don't know if it's just all barbecue related or if they're going to have other things going on. It's a fundraiser for a big church over there. So I heard they're doing a pretty good job with it. Another new contest for us is going to be Bloomington, Indiana this year, and that comes at the end of the season in September. And that one's geared up with a balloon festival as well. So some of them do stuff like that. Last year they weren't able to run the balloons due to the weather. It was too windy. But we'll see if they get them out this year. So, but we've traveled all over the country. I try to focus on the state of Indiana now. But 4 years ago we were in Vegas cooking. So, I mean, it's, you know, that year I was going for big contests. I wanted to really see what we could do. And never drove to Vegas, so we loaded up the RV, and it was a family affair, and, you know, my mom and dad and Jim and I went and drove all the way across the country. So that wasn't a very good trip for us, though. There was a lot of teams there. The best we scored was 50th place in one category, which they called top 50. That's how big the contest was. So we were lucky enough to get our name called, but not really too proud of it, you know. but the most of the contests, family-friendly. You know, competitors are usually fairly friendly. I mean,
yeah, that was my question. Can the casual observer, you know, talk to the contestants? Are they, you know, willing to chit chat?
Yeah, most of them. You know, there's just a few out there that keep to themselves, but most of us are pretty open with what we do and how we do it. We'll show them the cookers, we'll show them the trailers, you know, give them a little education on how we do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the years, we've met people that come up, they hang out. The only times it gets a little short, Saturday morning isn't a good time to come around and talk to people, and Friday morning, not really, because Friday morning you're doing all your prep work, and that's a long process, and Saturday morning, obviously, it's all about getting the product to the box and getting, yeah, I mean, everything. We've got half-hour windows. Usually it starts at, a you know, 11 or 11:30 turn-in, and every half hour you're turning something else in, and when you're dealing with piece of meats that take 14 hours to cook, there's a skill level to getting it off that cooker at the right time, you know, and getting it in the box to be the best product that you can possibly be, you know. But the flavor profiles switch out. I mean, 4 years ago, we had pork and ribs that were killing it. I mean, we were scoring great in those. Didn't change anything. They've kind of fallen off. Brisket is probably our best category right now, which, you know, our sponsors, the pork producers and Indiana Kitchen, I'm sorry that brisket's our best product right now, but it is. We're working on the others. So hopefully this year, just getting started, coming out of the gate, I hope we have a good positive out of the gate. I hope we score well at this contest. I mean, there's no guarantees. So you might be sitting there and you don't like our flavor profile, and you're really not supposed to, as a judge, judge one to the other. But it's hard not to do that. I mean, when you pick up one and it just blows you away, the hard part is if that one's the first one you're trying, and that's what how you're going to score the rest of your product. So if you give that one an 8 and a 9's a perfect score, and the next one comes in better than that, I mean, or slight, I mean, it's just hard to score, especially out of the gate. Now, when you get, usually a judge has to have 6 entries in front of them, okay? So if you're doing ribs, you have six different teams in front of you. It's easier to score once you're into it a little bit because now, okay, I've tasted.
Like you get a benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't have anything to go by with your first bite into your first rib. You're like, okay, it's pretty good, you know? And then you, well, this one's pretty good too. You know, I scored this one an 8. This one's not quite as good, I guess. And for me, I'm a certified judge as well. And I've done local events. I've never really done a KCBS event. I'm probably a higher scorer than what I should be. Just because I know the numbers that kill you. If you get a 6, you don't have a chance anyway. So, you know, why give them a 4? You know, why give them a 3? You know what I mean? Keep their spirit up a little bit, you know. But it's just mind-boggling to me that when you go in, you have 6 judges on a certain category, and you can do really well with 4 judges, and they're all scoring you really well, then you have these 2 judges that just kill you, and it's just like, you know, over the years of doing this, you can kind of determine who are rookies in barbecue.
Are they harsher or more lenient?
I would say they're harsher. They really don't know really what they're looking for. I mean, they've been to class, they've been trained, but until you're actually doing a few of them and you're experiencing it, it's hard, you know. And I think that they have a tendency to score lower than an experienced judge, because like me, I know a 6 is going to kill you, so I don't have to give you a 4, you know? I mean, now, if it's tastes like lighter fluid and you can't chew it, they're going to get a pretty low score, so might be a little less than a 6, but you don't find a lot of that, at least I don't, you know, with the people that I know, how they're cooking and stuff.
I'm kind of interested in the progression from backyard barbecuer to competitor to owning a restaurant. Is that a common progression, you know, and how did it work for you?
Well, there wasn't much backyard back then, you know. I mean, it was just a professional sport. Like I had mentioned, the first one we did, I would call that a backyard event. But there wasn't, those were few and far between, that kind of thing. You know, the American Royal, I mean, the Indiana, or which one was it? The World Pork Expo. That's by far not a backyard event. That's huge. Yeah. And then backyards really started coming on scene more, say, 4 or 5 years ago, where they would have multiple events. They'd have a professional event, and they also would have a backyard event.
So like the amateur category.
Right, yeah. And, you know, we've taken 2 different teams that we've kind of mentored over the last 4 or 5 years and helped them along with. We've got to know them in the backyard because, you know, we stroll through there and we're talkers, you know. So so we've taken a couple teams and we've started mentoring them. We're trying to talk one of them that we've been mentoring to jump to the professional side. But I don't know if they're really ready to do that. And they had some setbacks last year, but, they're going to be back on the road again this year at a few of the events. So we'll get to catch back up with them and see where they're at. But that's always fun. I mean, to me, I'll give those guys pretty much as I can to help them win, you know, show them the ways of how to do well. You know, some competitors will say, oh, we're a lot better than Squealers, and some are, you know, competing. But for us, it went from the backyard to a competition professional level. And like I mentioned earlier, my first really business venture was into the Ribfest industry. And so we would do the Marat downtown back in the day, and then now it's in Military Park, which it's an event that right now is kind of hit and miss if it's going to be around or not. But they have multiple of those all around the country, and that's how...
So you started out doing that?
Yeah, that's the progression to the business was originally was the Ribfest team. And I did, biggest year I did was 23 different cities in one summer. So I was gone a lot and sometimes not home for 3 weeks at a time, you know. So we'd have ribs shipped into the city that we were in. I mean, you know, it wasn't like we were hauling everything with us. So they'd bring in big meat trucks to these events and they unload to you. But I did that about 2 years. Then my daughter, she was born, and I needed to stay around the house a little bit more. So that's when I took the big jump into the restaurant business. And we opened Mooresville in 2001, and I had 9 employees. I managed from my cook's line. I did pretty much everything I had to do, you know, worked 100-hour weeks, those fun times like that. And then over the course of the years, we opened West 86th Street off of Zionsville Road and 86th Street in 2004. And then we opened this Castleton location here last year in April. So over the progression of opening more restaurants, I mean, challenge hasn't gotten any easier, I can tell you that. One thing, we run with about 140 to 150 employees now, so we do employ a lot of people. And we try to keep their employment there, you know. So that's kind of how it's changed for me. I mean, it went from my dad as a hobby and saying, hey, Jeff, you want to do this? I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun, too. Now of a daily adventure of restaurant industry, you know, which I've always been in the restaurant business. I mean, I started out in college in the restaurant business, worked for Wing Joints and Mexican Joint at one time that used to be around here way back when, and then the barbecue. So been doing Squealers now for about 17 years. So
any advice to people who are, you know, kind of thinking, well, my barbecue's pretty good?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, if they like to do it, come to a backyard event. I mean, there's I know Madison has one. All they need to do is reach out. Mark Kennedy at New Pal, they have a backyard event. That's a good contest to go to that's local.
Now, they don't have to have big fancy rigs to kind of dip their toes in the water, right?
No, bring whatever you're comfortable cooking on.
We've been talking with Jeff Yater of Squealers Barbecue in Indianapolis and Mooresville. For more information on the restaurants and the barbecue competitions, go to squealerbarbecue.com. Anyone out there who is dreaming a big dream and hoping to go chase it, local wine guy Dean Wilson has an inspiring story. You might remember him from his Dino's Vino wine shop and restaurant in Fountain Square, but now Dean lives in California and is making his own Scribble Scribble wines. The art for his wine label, Scribble Scribble, was created by his son, and his kids and his mom all have wines named after them. Dino is in town this week for a busy schedule of wine dinners and tastings with his latest releases, and I talked with him after a tasting at Ivy Tech.
You and I had this conversation over 3 years ago, and I was on the back of a patio, and I said, I'm going out there. I want to work 3 wineries. I want to spend 6 months at each one, and I want to get in, get out. And people are like, well, they're going to think you're a Dodger. You know, you're just in and out. You're a wine guy, and you want to learn all this. And yeah, I did. I wanted to grasp their knowledge, but I also wanted to work crush production and all that. I wanted to go from where it started. I've done the sales. I've done the marketing. I've done all that. I needed to learn production, and I needed to learn what it takes to make a good wine. And I'd listen, and I shut up, and I worked, and I asked questions. And winemakers were like, what's going on, man? And I'm like, I'm planning on doing my one thing one day. And I was always honest and open when I got the job. This is what I want to do. It just happened faster than I thought.
Well, now that's pretty cool. So what was the time frame that all this came about? Because you are making wine right now, and you've only been out in California for a while.
2.5 years. It'll be 3 years September 1st. Do you believe it? Wow. Right. And here we are with our second release, the 14 Reds. We came out here in November. We talked. But, yeah, this was about getting out there. So literally in 13, I came back, and then my mom passed, and then I went out there, and that's when it really turned. It was the mission. My mom said, I want you to be successful and happy in life. And I took that with a grain of salt, and I said, I'm doing it. I'm no longer going to work for another winery. But when I went back, I worked for a winery for 6 months pushing their stuff, and then I had a mission to quit because I said, if I don't do it now, I'll always be selling somebody else's juice. And it's time for me to do mine. So, yeah.
And it's happening. So now tell me a little bit about the wines that are available now in the Indianapolis market.
Yeah, we have 5 total. So, like, literally the reds, we age for 16 months in oak. So then we bottle, we hold those for 3 months, and then we release. Obviously, it's our first vintage. We want to hold it 6 months to a year, but we're not quite there yet, right? So that helps with the bottle shock process. So the whites we have are the Bellaboo 14, Lake County, Kelsey Bench, beautiful, 250 cases. Still got some of that left. The Bellaboo 15, which is Loaysa Vineyard, which is down in the valley, Big Valley, in Lake County again. Different style, though. So the 14 was the one that I call the food wine. The 15 is the one that I call the patio pounder.
A little sweeter, right?
Oh, yeah, just a hint, like of RS, just like a 0.5 or 0.6. And it actually, the 14 was 12.5 alcohol. This one's 12.1. So it still has good acidity and balance and not high heat. It's a very lovely wine. I think if people in Indiana would like it more because it's more floral, more apricot, more honey, you know, those flavors people like. And then we have a Zinfandel I named Lucille. So Bellaboo's my daughter, and then Lucille's my daughter. So Bellaboo and Lucille, 2 daughters. And Lucille's a Zin, and that's 87.5 Zin, 12.5 Petite Syrah, 196 cases done, 14.5 alcohol. Beautiful wine, well-constructed, just needs some time in the bottle because I added that Petite Syrah 3 months ago. So it just needs some time to come together. We call it melding, you know, the kind of time in the bottle shock. Petite Syrah is called the Max, 146 cases, 100% Petite Syrah. And then the Frizz, 50% co-fermented Zin and Petite, half ton each, 54 cases only. That's one pallet.
Now, the Max is named for your son,
yeah.
And the Frizz is named for your mom, right?
Yeah, the Max is killer. You met Max last night, the artist of the label at the age of 8. I incorporated my children, Jolene, because I wanted them to know that their dad was not going to forget about them when he moved to California, and he was going to implement them in part of the business. That was the most important part for me. And you saw last night as my kids are handing out price sheets. And my kids are involved selling T-shirts. The reason why I do that, because I want to let them know anything's possible that you put your mind to.
So because you wanted, here you were, Hoosier, and living in Indianapolis, working in Indianapolis, and you wanted to go to California and make wine, and you did. So what a cool illustration of you can do anything, you know, is that.
And that's an illustration for my children. It's not for and anybody else.
Well, yeah.
Anybody else out there that's listening, anybody else out that there's doing what I did, or you have a passion of what you're doing, from being a brewer to being a fermenter, you know, with brews and wines, and to being a distiller, to alcohol, to being a chef. If you want to do something, there's nobody that should be able to tell you no. If you do your due diligence, do your homework, do your math, do your everything you need to do to learn about your passion, and you go after it, then you're living your dream. I think last time we talked, I said, if this is working, clock me in, right? Clock me in. If this is considered work, what I love to do the rest of my life, if this is considered work, clock me in. I'm done. I don't never want to clock out, right?
Oh, that's great. That's great. And you know, what an inspiring story. You know, and, you know, we were talking earlier about the stories behind the wine. But the story behind the company itself is inspiring, too.
Yeah. Scribble, scribble. Yeah, it totally is. I mean, my thing is, I have a 9-year-old that designed my label, and I didn't pay $15,000 to a marketing company, right? I think people get it wrong. They think they need to hire these pros because they don't understand that attitude or that idea of marketing. But if you're starting your own company, you know better than anybody the message you're trying to portray.
Right. You know your story.
You know your story. You know your product. So stick with it. We always had a saying at Dino's, aces in the right places. So if you have somebody that can do the job better, let them do it. And I think you heard this a lot today. Humility, humble. I come back here and I'm I got my friends that, you know, hey, I come in, oh, I'm a winemaker, da, da, da. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, it's Dino, shut the heck up. You know, they don't care. That's their boy Blue that they knew back in the day. Yeah, same guy. Nothing's changed.
But tell me just a little bit about your history here in Indianapolis in restaurants and in the wine biz.
1992, I get out of the regular military. I go down to Vincent's, go to college, work at the Holiday Inn bar, restaurant. I know a little bit about wine. I come up to Indy 94, start working for Wilson and One-Liners, Big Dave, the King Wilson on the south side. I start in the kitchen. I start bartending. I'm prep cooking.
Well, that's a lot.
Right. And then during the days, I'm bartending at lunch shifts. At night, I'm making pizzas for the comedy club. And I had a blast, and I learned a lot. And then 95, pick up a job at Milano Inn, Tina LaGrada. I meet my ex-wife there. We have a lifetime. I work at Kona Jack's. I open up Kona Jack's downtown. I work at John Spirits 97 to 98, still working at Kona Jack's on the north side. I've never had one job, man.
Oh, my goodness, this is a lot.
Right? So 99, go back to Milano Inn for a year while they're opening up Kona Jack's downtown, help them open up Kona's downtown on Washington and Penn. Stay there for 2 years. At that point, that's where I start writing the Dino's Vino business plan.
Okay, so that's when it all started to come together.
16 years ago.
That's a while. An overnight success, 16 years.
Oh, yeah, I haven't. Well, you know, in coming back from California in 1992, 95 is when I kicked off the Dino's Vino logo and all that. My buddy Adam J. did the logo, and I just loved the logo because it was like everything that I epitomized in wine. A glass was half full. Mm-hmm. It was classy. It was retro. It was clean. And that's what I loved. And I was like, yeah, this says a lot about me. And we ran that until 2010, switched over, and that's when I went through my life change, right? You get a divorce, and I think people take divorce as bad. I took it as it was time to start a new chapter, and I have a great ex-wife. She's a great mother to my children, and it shows. My children are wonderful. And here you have me doing what I love to do, is making wine. So that escalated that and brought me into where I'm at now, and it is full circle. I'm making wine, and I can't believe it, but I love it. And when it turns out to be good, and I get compliments from friends that, hey, I can drink this, I'm like, good. You know, do I make an Opus 1? No. Do I make a first growth? No. Do I make wine that's palatable and good to drink? Yes.
We've been talking with Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wine. We'll be back with more from Dean here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, I love it when a plan comes together. So the wine tasting plan that Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech came up with for an event with winemaker Dean Wilson for a wine tasting with students via Skype worked out great. The students were to do a wine and food pairing with Dean's Scribble Scribble Wines for an event this past week, so they did a wine tasting with him ahead of time. He tasted wines with the students via Skype, and they talked about foods that would pair well with his wines. Then Dean came to town and got to try the foods that the students came up with. Dean tells us how that worked out from a winemaker's perspective, and Chef Tom England tells us how it worked out for the class.
I came back to sell our Reds, which was our 2014 release, and flew in, and our first night we had the Greek wine dinner. And it was sold out. It was an awesome time. You were there. It was good food, good wine, good times. And we're basically here to promote the 14 Reds. Here at Ivy Tech, though, I Skyped Chef Tom England from Ivy Tech, the culinary lead instructor for the program. And
now tell me about that, what you did when you Skyped with his class.
Yeah, it was, I was just like, you know, I did this with Ridge back in the day when I was at the Columbia Club. I'd really like to do this. I believe that a face to a place or a face to a name is more essential. And if I can interact, it's even better. And just instead of a phone call, it brings a face, right? So you trust it in more than just a phone call, you know? So I was like, let's Skype, you know, and let's, you know, it's fun.
Now, this is with his wine class.
Yeah, four people in this class taking it currently, a smaller class, he said, in the fall time or spring time class. And he's like, this is going to be great. We're going to pair foods with your wine, and I just want to take my class through it. So we took him through all five of our wines. So we have two whites, the Muscat Canelli with 14 and 15, and then we have the 14s, three of those. And so we went through them all.
So you talked them through a tasting on Skype. Now, how did that go?
Had our sales manager, Larry, drop off two bottles of each, just in case one was corked. Yeah, and for Chef and the students, they kept them, they opened them, they got them ready, and then they popped them, and I was like, well, let's go in this order. Let's do Belabou's, Infidel Max, and then the Frizz. We did all that. And then after that, it was a Q&A. But I guided him through, and Chef said something funny. He's like, yeah, you didn't tell them what to get, what they were going to expect. He goes, you asked them what they were getting. And that's what we ask, you know, what do you get? You know, what do you mean, what do you get? We ask that as is what kind of flavors, nuances, and stuff like that. And his staff was so attentive to detail, and it opened up eyes and doors for us. It was just enlightening. I mean, they were digging it. They were
so what the over. What the students were tasting and what they were finding in the wines.
Yeah, exactly. And they put the location. You know, it's not just scribble is all about. Every scribble tells a story, but I believe, like what Chef said, every wine has a story, and that's what you saw those students pull away from it. And so we're only telling the story of what everybody expects, right? And I love it. And because these guys got the wines and then they're like, man, these are brilliant. These are acidity. And the whole class said these wines are balanced. You tell a winemaker his wines are balanced, you just made his day for the rest of his life.
Aw, that's a good thing. So it's so nice that the students thought that. But now what they had to do was come up with pairings, right?
Right, yeah. So their idea was to take the pairings and chefs all like me, you know, compare or contrast. Let's make this happen. And it was dynamite. Everything I tasted today was dynamite.
So they Skyped with you and tasted the wines, and then they came up with pairings that you then got to taste today for the wine tasting.
Exactly. And what we had up here today was so humbling, Jolene. You know, people I've worked back over 20 years ago coming to support their man and say favorable things is just... it's unreal.
So you had a lot of people come for the tasting with the students. So it was the wines that the students tasted sometime before, and they came up with these dishes.
Yeah.
And then we got to see how well the wine goes with the food, because that's what you're making. You're making food-friendly wine. And then I caught up with Chef Tom out in the Ivy Tech garden after the tasting to see how he thought it went.
And he did a really good job of actually asking each of the students, what do you smell in this? What do you think the great flavors are? And then what would you pair with this? And so the students developed the menu for the tasting we did today just through that talk.
Now, how did that go? Tasting wine with the winemaker via Skype, you know, how'd that go?
It went really well. I was very excited afterwards. All the students were really excited afterwards. They felt connected to him. And they wanted to spend more time doing stuff with him. So, you know, they definitely felt that connection. And it's something that really worked, because he could do that and then the next week come into town and have everything planned out. So
the students then, with you, created a menu to go with the wines?
Yeah, absolutely. So they were able to put together the menu. They knew the wines already. And then as we put the food together, they were able to taste and talk about the wine. Yeah.
How do you think they did? I thought that the wines are very food friendly anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of the things with wines that I'm always having hard times making pairings with is because they don't have enough acid, or they don't have enough of the taste elements, the acid, sugar, bitter, those qualities to pair with food. All of these wines are made for the Hoosier palate. They're made for the Hoosier food. And so, you know, we put together some really fun pairings and you know, just tried to have fun with it. Totally tried to have making cake pops and bologna sandwiches. I mean, you know, you don't think about these things when you're doing the fancy wine things. But, yeah, I mean, it's food friendly. So just have fun with it.
I think sometimes people might be a little bit intimidated when they think about food and wine pairings, like it has to be serious food and wine pairings, but not necessarily.
Right. No. And you know, these wines especially, they're made to drink. I mean, they're everyday drinking wines. And so, you know, if you're sitting down to dinner, you're not always having fancy shishi food. I mean, come on. I mean, I could have a fried bologna sandwich. I mean, and that Zinfandel was perfect with that. I mean, obviously it's not your average everyday bologna sandwich, but I mean, whatever you're having for dinner, you should be able to drink some wine with it. You don't have to think of, you know, I have to have, you know, my tartare or whatever. I mean, it can't, come on. It's just a drink. I mean, you need to enjoy it. So,
well, and all of those things paired so nicely with it. Yeah. And it was kind of a surprise. I mean, you know, you had, brisket and filet, and you had cake pops, for heaven's sakes, yeah, where you were pairing with them. So that was very fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was also kind of surprising because afterwards I was asking everybody, okay, what was your favorite pairing? Everybody said something different. It wasn't, everybody was unanimous in saying, oh yeah, the brisket was good with the frizz. But you know, it was, some people were debating the acid structure in the scallops and versus the muscat canelli and things like that. And so it was really interesting to see and to hear people's opinions. And it was interesting to hear that they had opinions. So it wasn't just like somebody saying, oh, I like this or I like that. There was thought behind it. And, you know, in the American society, we have two words to describe food, good or bad, you know? And this wasn't that at all. It was, oh my God, the acid structure in this is amazing. And these are students who are just learning about wine and yet they're able to pull all that stuff out of it.
Would you do it again? Would you do another sort of Skype wine tasting?
Yeah, in fact, we were just talking about that. We've got to do this again. And, you know, we have a lot of winemakers that come into market. So being able to do that with the winemakers would be really cool before they come in and let the students get some involvement at an earlier time before they get there. It'll obviously help out with the salespeople as they start to go into market with them and, you know, just kind of show off what's going on. And the winemaker gets a feel for the town, too, that way.
We've been talking with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College and winemaker Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wines. For more information and to keep up with Dean, look for him on Facebook. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. I am glad you tuned in this week, so thank you for listening, and thanks also to our guests, Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue, Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wines, and Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.